The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, Visa.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course, the DraftKings Network, DK Network, live from Bar Canada at the D's. Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, numbers game. How you doing, man? You good?
Doing well. How you doing?
I'm good. We're being serenaded by Aerosmith a little bit in the background. That's all right.
Yeah, cool. This is one of the greatest soundtrack songs of any movie. Come on, man. This is from Armageddon.
Oh, it's in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
But maybe originally Armageddon.
And then what's his? It's his daughter, right? That's the actress?
Liv.
Yeah. Liv Tyler's in this, and it's the scene when she's like making out with Ben Affleck or something.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen. We've done all we can do today.
Out.
Bidlin, out. We got a lot of baseball on the show. Mark Borchardt will join us from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. Paul Sporer from Fangraphs to talk both ALCS and NLCS with us. Drew Dinsick on the NFL. I got some questions for Drew. And, of course, football from last night. First of all, let's start with the baseball games because we will get to Borchardt and Sporer later. First, it was the American League Championship Series game number two yesterday, and Texas refuses to lose. They have won seven in a row to start the postseason. They take a 2-0 lead over the Astros in the best of seven American League Championship Series, and they do it on the strength of a four-run first. They actually had four base hits within the first 10 pitches from Framber Valdez, and the really, maybe even worse than that was Framber Valdez's throwing error in the middle of all that. Robbie Grossman was up it, that throwing error, that is, scoring Marcus Semien to start the festivities for the Rangers. That four-run spot, eventually a 5-1 lead, was just a little too much for the Astros to overcome despite the heroics of Yordan Lamar Alvarez. I think his middle name is really Ruben, but you know what I mean.
I was just going to ask about 5-4.
5-4. You get the idea. 5-4. The Rangers win that game and again take the 2-0 lead in that series. Looks like they're going to go with Max Scherzer in game three, which we'll discuss with both Sporer and Borchardt. And then the National League Championship Series started last night, and the Phillies just a barrage early against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and specifically Zach Gallen, home runs galore from the usual suspects in this ballgame to get the Phillies off to the start. It was a Schwarber solo shot on the game's very first pitch, or at least the first pitch from Gallen anyway. Top second, Harper gone on a first pitch solo shot. Bottom second. Later in that inning, Castellanos gone, 3-0. Held on, though. 5-0 lead eventually was 5-3, and so the Phillies run line bettors get home just barely at -1.5 +120 with the 5-3 win. So the Phillies, who have only lost one game this postseason, remember that one where the Braves furiously came back and then doubled up Harper on that great catch by Michael Harris in that game against the Braves. The Phillies off to a 1-0 lead in the best of seven National League Championship Series. So game two is tonight, and we'll discuss that with our baseball guest. Football last night, though, let's launch into this. Chargers and the Cowboys last night, which Kelly looked like at the very beginning of this game. All that I started with guessing lines yesterday where I'm like, oh, this product is not what it has been these last couple of weeks. These games are all very weird and low scoring and all that. This game started right out of the chute. You're like, okay, here we go. After a 3-and-out for Dallas, the Chargers matriculated down the field. There was a 26-yard punt return. Then they started at their own 42. Herbert to Eckler for 28. Then Herbert to Allen from 1 yard out. 7-0, less than 5 minutes in. Dallas comes back with a 75-yard drive. They convert a 4th-and-1. Then Dak Keeper from 18, his longest touchdown run of his career, 7-7. 6:21 left in the first quarter. You're like, oh, the over is going to soar here. Over bettors have this right. Here's what happened after that. Chargers 3-and-out, Dallas punt, Chargers punt, Dallas 3-and-out, Chargers 3-and-out, Dallas 4th-and-1 at the Chargers 13 with 2:29 left in the second quarter. Dak stuffed on a tush push, or as we like to call it, the tuchus push. Again, only the Eagles have this perfected.
It really is incredible.
Then the Chargers punt, and then Dallas, and this is where the shenanigans begin, ladies and gentlemen. Dallas at the end of the first half, they settle for a Brandon Aubrey 33-yard field goal to make it 10-7. That was after they let 5 seconds run off the clock for no reason, preventing them from taking a shot at the end zone from the 14-yard line. Mike McCarthy, who had two timeouts in pocket, literally says to the ref, they have him reading the lips. He's like, why are you stopping the clock? He literally says that to the ref. So Dallas,
just
for whatever,
assuming you're going to be intelligent and take a timeout and take a shot at the end zone. That's that wasn't right. Even the worst one. It was Gallup, right? Beforehand, there was like 45 seconds left. Gallup, I mean, this is the one, I guess I'll give McCarthy a little. No, I'm not going to give him a break here. He goes out of bounds. They wind the clock and it's right on the Dallas sideline. And they're like, there's 45 seconds left and they just got into Chargers territory and they don't call a timeout. Winding clock.
Joe Fortenbaugh had a tweet. I wish I had sent it to you, which was sort of like, he goes, that's it. This is the coaching matchup that will get me to stop watching football for good. That was his scar. Wait, it gets worse. If we focus on these kinds of things too early, we're never going to get through this. Second half, because the end is just fabulous. Chargers matriculate 4th-and-1 on the Dallas 7. Then this is in the third quarter. Herbert rolls right. Incomplete intended for Palmer. Dallas 3-and-out. Remember, this is still 10-7 game. Chargers do get a Dicker 24-yard field goal. It's tied up at 10, 108 left in the third, a game that started out as if it was going to be a shootout. Fourth quarter, we're only in fourth quarter. Dallas first play, 3rd-and-11 at the Dallas 24. Dak avoids the rush, hits Pollard in stride. He gets spun around by Michael Davis and propelled forward 60 yards later. Asante Samuel Jr. brings him down. By the way, I don't think enough was made about this play. I'm not sure why Pollard decided to just, I'm going to run down the middle of the field so Asante Samuel can catch me. Maybe try to run away from him because he felt him too. He saw him.
Yep.
No one said a word. I don't know if that had bothered anybody else. Five plays later, Dak to Cooks from two out. 17-10 Dallas, 11-19 left. Then the Chargers, 1st-and-10 at their own 25. Herbert misses a wide-open Keenan Allen would have been a touchdown, I think.
Yeah, he might have had to make one guy miss, maybe.
Maybe. Wasn't his first miss to Allen in the game. Chargers end up with a 2nd-and-24. They get a 23-yard pickup. Then a hold on Zion Johnson on 3rd-and-1. They have to punt. You can't make this up. So J.K. Scott punts. In case you missed it, these are the highlights you really need to know. Kevontae Turpin of Dallas fair catches it, but the Chargers' Jasir Taylor pushes Jalen Tolbert into him. Jalen Tolbert thinks it's a loose ball and it's a fair game for everybody. He touches it just before Amen Agbambamiga recovers for the Chargers. Now, this was also because the referees were convinced. They already called it, right? They're like, no, that's Cowboys ball. And then they had to go through commercial replaying it, and then they've realized, oh, yeah, it's really the Chargers' ball because it was a guy who got pushed in to Tolbert. Tolbert got pushed into Turpin. And so that makes it eligible. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that it was interference, which is what they assumed.
So was that the initial call? Because I never saw a flag thrown. I had it on mute at that. The official who
was pointing as Cowboys ball assumed that there was interference.
Yeah, but you never threw a flag, right?
That's a good point.
I was confused about that, too.
Oh, wait, there's more that the refs messed up. So Dallas matriculates now. By the way, Chargers end up scoring on that, 17-17. By the way, 4th-and-goal at the 1, 6'6", 240-pound Justin Herbert was in shotgun. They threw it to Gerald Everett for a 1-yard score. 17-17, 7-11 left. So Dallas gets downfield. Then the refs mess up a Chargers challenge. Then the umpire almost gets trampled when the ball snapped, but he's in there trying to allow for a substitution on the defense. That was fun.
Yep. Yeah, watching that replay was a lot scarier.
Yeah.
There was like a guard pulling, and you're like, oh, my God, little guy, get out of there.
Get trampled. End up with the Cowboys end up with a 3rd-and-10 at the Chargers 21 after the Chargers used all their timeouts. So then Dak, this is 3rd-and-10, right? All they have to do, if they get the first down, the game is effectively over because the Chargers are out of timeouts. And I get it, the defense has something to do with this too. But instead of trying to get the first down, Dak goes in the end zone to Pollard, incomplete. They settle for an Aubrey 39-yard field goal, 20-17 Dallas, 2:19 left. So that's also like a strategic error. And again, allowing for the fact that the defense might be like lined up trying to prevent a first down. Maybe that's the play because we don't have all 22. But your play ought to be to try to get the first down, not the touchdown there.
Yeah, or make that throw.
Or make that throw. There's also that.
Make that throw.
So the Chargers down 3 now. First down. Herbert goes to Keenan Allen, who loses his bearings. Do you remember? He catches the ball. He sort of spins, and he's out of bounds. And he kind of slams the ball in his hand. He's like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Then, by the way, it didn't matter anyway because Dallas was offside. Then 2nd down, sacked by Parsons. 3rd down, picked by Gilmore. Ball game. And a nice little tribute by the Cowboys. I don't know if you noticed this while in victory formation. They honored the Tom Landry Cowboys with their offensive line shift that they did throughout my entire childhood. Anyway, Cowboys win this game. McCarthy, the Chargers, it's just you cannot, there's not enough time to go through all of the gas. Scott Kazmaier putting this now, this week of the NFL in context for us after this game, the Cowboys won 20-17 for only the second time since 1994. Nine teams won in the NFL this week without scoring 21 points. That's the whole salary cap era. That was this week in the National Football League. And by the way, everybody betting sort of rampant blanket unders at this point. But I just want to point out one other thing. And maybe I should give this more time. But, you know, in our heads, we're all like, Justin Herbert is really, really good at football. And Tua Tagovailoa got so much incoming the last few years. Here's just one data point, and I get it. It's a game that's dependent on teammates. But their career records now, including the postseason, Justin Herbert is 27-28 all time. 27-28 all time. Tua Tagovailoa is, do we have that handy? We do not. I will call it up right here. Tua Tagovailoa lifetime is 26-14. And so I just want to throw this out there because Herbert missed some big plays yesterday. And can we throw the Ed Werder tweet up real quick? Because this also puts it in context for Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert, this per Ed Werder. That Stephon Gilmore clinching interception. No, Justin Herbert threw his 13th career interception in the fourth quarter of a one-score game tonight. That's five more than any other quarterback in the NFL since entering the league in 2020. Am I saying that Justin Herbert is no good at football? Of course not. But am I saying that maybe he shoulders some of this blame and it's not all Brandon Staley? I am. And it's time we kind of accept that. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the NFL on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, Kelly, we got to take a break and talk about Zyn nicotine pouches. We're always debating what a team needs to do to get to number one, but Zyn nicotine pouches are already there. It's helped millions of people achieve lasting change, earning the title of America's number one nicotine pouch. Now, if you're a smoker or dipper looking to ditch the ashtray or spit cup, look no further than Zyn. Zyn's made with six simple ingredients and is available in a wide range of varieties, including spearmint, citrus, and even coffee. Bill 80 swears by wintergreen, as we like to say. And it's available in two strengths, so you can control your nicotine satisfaction. Because it's discreet, you can enjoy it anywhere, anytime, so you have never really needing a moment to miss in all of this. Let me say that otherwise. Anytime, so you never have to miss a moment of the game, for instance, if you're watching that. Plus, every can of Zyn earns you points towards premium items like tailgating gear, top-of-the-line tech, Zyn swag, and even gift cards. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. A warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Tim Thompson, great analysis of last night's game. Two franchises that have squandered talent with horrible coaching in the last 10 to 20 years. The call on the punt was not interference, but that refs thought it touched the Chargers first, which means Dallas can fumble and not be a touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other option.
It was one of those two
but
things.
But it was very definitive.
Yeah. Kevin Ryan, Gil, Buckman, Buck and Aikman. I almost said Buckman. Buck and Aikman must have said the word analytics 10 times last night. Where's the analytic talk about teams bringing the kickoff back? That, to me, is the most glaring mistake any NFL team can make during a game. I take the ball at the 25 100% of the time. I will say this about, you know, there was the London game, the Tottenham game, where at the end of the first half, like, why wasn't the Titans return man coached not to even touch the football? There's nothing good that can happen there. Led to a Ravens field goal, if you recall, on the muff. Michael Burns, Kelly sounds spry today. Must have taken the Epsom salt soak. There is a conspiracy. This is also from PJ. There's a conspiracy about the Chargers fan saying she was an NFL plant to try and raise their fan base. It is odd they had a perfect angle and kept coming back to her. New York Mets 16. Maybe they showed the young lady going crazy because she was the only Chargers fan at SoFi. And Bruce Dobigan playing a little game called What Job Would an NFL Coach Have If Not Coaching? I'll start with Mike McCarthy, Jiffy Lube manager, he says. No offense to Jiffy Lube managers. I'm sure they do a fine job and it's a big business to run. Drew Dinsick at Whale underscore Capper, both the Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcast from NBC Sports, joins us once again. So, Drew, on a weekend, week six, Scott Kazmaier was tweeting earlier that nine teams won with fewer than 21 points. Nine teams won with fewer than 21 points. I mean, that is, and again, he put it sort of in historical context for us, which is you know, which is that that's the whole salary cap era. That's from 1994. That hasn't happened. Second time since 1994. What did you learn most from week six, and what have you bet in week seven?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some wild anomalies all year. Like, I think week four, you had seven teams that didn't score an offensive touchdown. Like, these are wild, weird, outlier type of bad offensive performances you're getting from these teams so far.
Is there a reason? Is there a reason for that, by the way? Do you attribute it to just not taking preseason seriously? Like, what's the reason?
It's a good question, and I don't have all of the answers. My understanding or my assumption is that defenses are just ahead of offense right now in terms of how to scheme effectively for the type of quarterback play and the type of skill position players that are available right now. You know, there was a pretty significant wave and shift of defensive style of play in the wake of Pat Mahomes just burning every team over the top, where now teams are playing with more more defensive backs on the field, and they've now pivoted from more defensive backs on the field to having one of those guys that is especially good at run fit. And so base defense has kind of shifted away from, you know, any type of, you know, extra off ball linebackers, which are kind of useless in today's game. So, it's been pretty clear, at least, that defenses in the way that they're trying to defend the current state of the NFL is making it tougher for teams to perform well in the red zone, making it tougher for them to have explosive plays. And I think for those reasons, you're seeing a lot more of these sort of chess matches decided by field goal type of games. And, I don't know that we've seen anyone really solve that style of defensive, personnel, at least not effectively. We've seen a bunch of teams try to come up with innovative ways to make life harder on them. The more successful offenses so far this season seem to be teams that are pivoting into heavier personnel packages, having two tight ends on the field. But if one or both of those tight ends aren't, real threats to catch the pass, then I think you're pretty clearly telegraphing you're going to run, and then defenses, you're somewhat predictable. So it's kind of a mix, I think, of we had a huge amount of turnover in offensive coordinators in the offseason. It wasn't talked about a lot, but there was something like 12 or 18 new offensive coordinators combined with, five new quarterbacks. And by the way, we have a wave of, three rookies that started week one combined with three guys who had made hardly any starts in their career, four if you want to include Kenny Pickett. And so you basically had, a third of the league with brand new quarterback play, half of the league with brand new offensive coordinators. Oh, and by the way, defenses right now are ahead of offense in general. So I think all kind of stewing to make a little bit more of a defensive product to start the season. And, it's not going to change or get better anytime soon. There were, I'm losing count now, 8 quarterback injuries.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean,
look forward to that, boys and girls. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to have fun? Do a little thought exercise. What should be the total in a game between Aiden O'Connell and Tyson Badgett? What's a fair total there, guys? Because I don't know the answer.
Wow.
I mean, like, there's realistically below 50th percentile quarterback play across almost half of the teams that are going to suit up this Sunday. And the Sunday, this week is going to be even tougher because you have 6 teams on bye. And, these are the dog days of the NFL season, particularly with what's going on with the injuries.
On guessing lines yesterday, the first 3 games, we didn't know 5 of the 6 quarterbacks that would be playing.
Yeah, exactly.
So obviously, the betting market is drifting now with lower totals. Did you get ahead of any of those this week?
No, I'm pretty much out of the totals game for right now. I think we're kind of settling right around where they ought to be. The average total for so far this season has been 44. The average actual points scored is about 43.5. So there's not a huge mean difference in terms of what the production has been in the totals. That said, unders are hitting at a 61% clip so far. Mm-hmm. I think that's, just in general, the median is missing the closing total by about a point and a half. So, as you look across the board this week, and, I haven't gone through the weather carefully to really kind of help buttress this, but the numbers look like they're starting to get pretty close to, what the current state of scoring is in the NFL, which is you want to be on the lower side of 43.
What did you bet so far?
I have a number of sides in the accounts, and so far the only reason that I'm on any of these is the adjustment between what I expected, you know, with any kind of weight on a preseason prior and what is actually open right now is impossible to square. Good example is Patriots at 8.5 against the Bills. This reflects somewhere in the ballpark of a 6-point adjustment off of the preseason priors for these teams. And the Patriots, while they have not performed to the level that was expected, they have played a very tough schedule and, you know, are at least healthier than the Bills. So I'm not sure 6 points there was warranted. And I think outside of a touchdown, I like the Patriots. Similarly, the Vikings at +7 against the Niners is a huge number. The Vikings are playing much better than their record so far this season. This preseason look ahead was San Francisco -1. So we've adjusted this one 6 points. And again, San Francisco is not coming in a perfect state of health by any stretch of the imagination. Trent Williams, Debo Samuel, and Christian McCaffrey are all guys that matter for that offense, and they all went out in that game against the Browns, and now they have another road game with with that, an extra day to get right. But you read some of the quotes and some of the conversation around Shanahan, and it's pretty clear that they are not just planning for this Vikings game this week, but also for the Bengals game the following week, because they have a short week to prepare for that one. So a little bit of potential that San Francisco just tries to go in and get an ugly win and get out of town. So 7 points in pocket feels pretty good. Denver Broncos defense is getting a lot healthier. Green Bay Packers haven't done anything to really warrant a 4-point adjustment to the good relative to their preseason prior. So I like the Broncos money line at +100. This is again, we expected to see something like Broncos -3.5 based on the preseason priors. And
I was getting Packers at -1. Yeah, I was totally surprised the Packers were a favorite yesterday on guessing lines. And I'm no Broncos fan. I'm no Sean Payton fan, but I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, if Aaron Jones is good to go and he's 100%, then this is probably going to be a pretty competitive game and Packers may win. But Broncos defense getting healthier matters, I think. And they're not... this is still not a great situation for the Packers to go in his favorites, yeah, in my opinion. Jordan Love is performing really, really poorly this season. I don't know really what to make of that.
Real quick, yes or no, do you like that Kyle Shanahan and the Niners went back to Santa Clara between the Cleveland and Minnesota games?
I think it was the right call. Okay. The fact that the Minnesota game's on Monday night and you're not going to get a time advantage by acclimating the Coast Central Time, whatever. That makes sense to me to go back. And yeah, the fact that they got to play at Cincinnati on a short week after and they want their guys in their beds, all that checks out.
Thank you, Drew. Baseball with Paul Spohr next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com to check the current betting splits data.
But seriously, NSYNC's better than Backstreet Boys.
What did you say?
NSYNC's better than Backstreet Boys.
Well, stop it. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, yet another way that VSiN is here to make you smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. The truth is, I have no opinion on that subject, to be honest with you. But I will say the Backstreet Boys did I guess you can call it a residency across the street at Planet Hollywood, across the street on the strip anyway, Planet Hollywood. And my girl was so excited to go. And it was the most cheeseball thing I've ever seen in my life.
I bet they were like Billy Joel. Do they play all their old hits?
Oh, well, that's all they have.
Imagine if Backstreet Boys is like, all right, we're going to roll out some of our new stuff.
Oh, God. This is old men. It's like, this is great. Pete Futek, ladies and gentlemen, he's always great. Whether it's old school or new school, he's always got good stuff. He is the founder of collegefootballnews.com, here to talk college football with us, and it's about time. How you doing, Peter?
Well, first of all, you're saying you're in Vegas, and that's the most cheeseball thing you've ever seen. And two, in your banter back and forth, did I hear you go Bobby Brown every little step? Speaking of boy bands, good to go solo, a little Bobby Brown every little step there.
Wow. I didn't catch that I did a Bobby Brown thing.
I didn't.
No.
You did.
I also didn't call them the most cheesiest thing I've ever seen, the most cheesy thing, but you gave it a superlative. So I believe I was misquoted there, Peter Futek. It's okay.
Okay, sorry, just the cheesiest thing. Okay, I threw a little thing on there. So cheesiest, I added a Yeah. You said the cheesiest. So that's pretty impressive stuff.
I'll tell you, one of the most awesome things I saw was Babyface last Friday night at the Palms. Now that did include every little step by Bobby Brown. Anyway,
Gil Lover in the house. Look out.
Well, here's the thing. So we got to talk about last weekend first. It's high time. Speaking of Friday night, Colorado and Stanford.
Yep.
Now let's take the Mark Jones announcing thing aside. Because, God, if I'm the network...
Well, how about the 19 alerts every minute from ESPN telling me that Deion Sanders is mad at you and coming for you and all that kind of stuff?
Well, by the way, if I'm the network, I thought that broadcast was shameful. I really do. But that's another subject.
You can't be a cheerleader. You can't.
Anyway, you can't. You cannot talk about how this lead has been epically... You cannot not talk about how the lead has been epically squandered. You cannot not emphasize how bad that pass was by Shedeur Sanders in overtime.
Well, Colorado's not good. Start with that. You're not dog. I love Deion Sanders is my favorite probably sports personality of all time. And I love this Colorado thing. And it's amazing what they've done. But Colorado's not good because they're not good on the lines. And I've said this all along. Even if they did beat Stanford, they aren't winning another game. Arizona's good. So Arizona was their one shot.
Okay.
If you look at the rest of their schedule, if they beat Stanford, Arizona was their one shot at going bowling. And now Arizona, after what they did to Wazoo, they're not beating Arizona. They're definitely not winning any of these other big games against these good teams going the rest of the way. So all of a sudden, you're hyping up big time a probable 4-8 team here, which, again, great turnaround from what they were as probably the worst or second worst of Northwestern Power 5 program last year. Amazing stuff. But to give them this type of hype is kind of insane, especially when there are so many other big things going on. But I get it. I love Deion, too. So I get it.
Yeah.
But just not that great.
Big difference between, that not getting a fifth win. 4-8 doesn't look all that good at all at that point. Not that a 5-win season would be that spectacular, but it just feels a little.
From last year it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels a lot better.
Turnaround.
Okay. Of course, the game that lived up to all the hype, UW in Oregon, which Washington gets it done in the end, in large part because Dan Lanning apparently couldn't take all the flash and all the other stuff that occurred on the other side of the field. He went for it twice on fourth down deep into Washington territory. Those both failed. Then he tried to seal the deal on fourth down late, and it all backfired, and Washington wins this football game 36-33, 3-point favorite in the end, so right on the number. How do you feel, though? Oregon, Bo Nix looked great. Oregon can still get to the promised land, can't they, even with the loss? What's your takeaway?
Yeah, look, if your college kicker pushes that thing a foot to the other side, it's overtime and it's a different narrative right now. Look, I am not the go-for-it guy, but if that's your thing, let it be your thing. Like, again, he's got a narrative and he didn't waver from it. So that I don't mind. If that's your team's mindset, if that's you say, we're aggressive at all times, okay, I will buy that. It's the selective aggressiveness. I usually have a problem with that. But if you're going to say, my team, I believe in you, I believe in my quarterback, we're going to go for it each time. And it took, even going for it on fourth down, it took an NFL, that laser beam, second to last pass that Michael Penix threw between two guys. Oh, man, that's a real man pass. Yeah, that was amazing. It took that, and it took a draw and a missed kick. It took a lot of other things for them to lose that game. But you're right. Oregon's still in this. I think Washington's got two losses. I mean, the Pac-12 is just going to eat itself up. I mean, you look at all these games. They all play USC. They all play Washington State. Oregon State, I think, is going to be a massive player in this. Utah is still going to be a massive player. UCLA is good enough. And they all play each other, and they all have the free space win against Colorado, and they all have the problems playing everyone else along.
What a way for this conference to go out. It's the best conference of college football, I think, right now.
Again, look, right now, the crazy part about it is two of the three best SEC teams are in the Big 12, and you could argue that two of the five best Big 10 teams, actually three of the six best Big 10 teams, or even seven are in the Pac-12. So it's an amazing, amazing year for this conference. All Unfortunately, right. They're going away.
Let's do rapid fire, Pete. Rapid fire here for the last 4 minutes. All right. Penix is the rightful favorite to win the Heisman Trophy.
Until proven otherwise, you have to. There's still more to come. But at the moment, it's got to be him. Otherwise, who else is it? Must bring pay.
I alluded to Alabama in the last segment, figuring out a way to hold off Arkansas. Jalen Milroe made one big play there on a conversion late. Yep. If Alabama ends up with one loss, they're in the playoff no matter what, right?
Absolutely. If they win the SEC, but here's the other crazy part. If Georgia loses a game along the way, it wouldn't be insane if you don't have an SEC team in the college football playoff, because Alabama could lose along the way to an LSU or to somewhere. I think they lose to Auburn, if it's my craziest call here. But it's, yes, Alabama, 12-1 SEC champion, Alabama is absolutely in the college football playoff.
All right. I was saying earlier, Michigan, we don't, you know, as great as they've been, we don't really know anything about them based on competition. Same can be said for Penn State. I guess Ohio State had the win at Notre Dame, but I pointed out, you know, Marshall won the game there, and so did Stanford. Penn State, Ohio State, this weekend, who you got?
Ohio State, very, very sheepishly, mainly because it fits my narrative that I think we're going 2008 Big 12 South. We remember with Texas, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech all beat each other, and they all had the same record. I kind of think Ohio State, Michigan State are all going to end up at 11-1, in which case it'd probably be Ohio State that gets the nod because it's common opponents from the West. But Penn State's really good. Ohio State at home is going to pull it out. I wish the number was more than 4. I would love to take Ohio State, but Penn State to cover. 4 is just too tight. So I'm going to very sheepishly say Ohio State in this.
You're taking the points, you said? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'll take that. 4 is too little. If it started off 5.5 or so, I would take Penn State to cover in that. But now 4 is a little too low. I think it's going to go lower than that. Ohio State with the points.
All right. Iowa, Wisconsin, well under the total of 31.5. Well under with only 21 scoring. What about Iowa, Minnesota, 32.5? Under?
I can't. Look, I'm not a Moneyball believer necessarily. I'm a believer that you always, always, always go over if you're given 32. And it just goes against my beliefs. But man, that system kind of works. Iowa definitely beating Minnesota, and given the points. Minnesota does not beat Iowa. And I will always take the over on 32. And I'm the silly man if it doesn't work.
Silly man. Okay. What's your favorite bet of the weekend?
Going back to what you were saying, what do we want in this betting world? You want consistency. And nobody is more crazy consistent than Michigan. They are killing everybody. And just, you know what you're getting right now. They don't give up more than 7 points. And when they do, it's the 10 points against Minnesota on one big play where you had a slip defensive back. They're going to beat Michigan State by more than 24.5. They're just destroying everything in their path. You're right. They haven't really played anybody that great. So what do? You be perfect. And they have been perfect against this mediocre schedule the whole way. I like that. And I like Tennessee to cover against Alabama. Not really that hot that they're going to, but 9.5, Alabama's just too shaky. Tennessee's just okay, but 9.5's a little too much for me.
Last thing, Utah and USC. SC favored by a touchdown. What do you think?
That's a lot. USC's going to bounce back. Utah's pretty slick, but I'm going to go USC in the points in that.
Peter Futak, Power 5 snob, everybody. Appreciate it, Pete. Thank you so much.
There.
At Pete Futak, FIUTAK, collegefootballnews.com is where you can find out everything that Pete is writing about. And man, does he write about everything. It is a treasure trove of college football news. We'll get back to baseball on the other side. Mark Borchardt on both the AL and NLCS. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.